What's up, guys? This is Stuart. Welcome to another episode of the Tactics Con podcast. You can find more information about the Tactics Conference at tacticscon.com. Thank you so much, Pastor Chris, for coming to hang out with us. Pastor Chris, you came out and spoke at our inaugural Tactics Conference, so I appreciate you very much for coming to do that. While you were there, you were giving away copies of your Tom Bombadil book, and I, confession, had not read it before that point. But I finished it relatively recently, and I was reading through In the House of Tom Bombadil, and I was reading that particular section of The Lord of the Rings at exactly the same time. So it was a lot of fun for me. So one of the things that I'd like to talk about, well, I'd like to talk about a couple of things today. First, I'd like to talk about Tom Bombadil and your inspiration behind that and why you wanted to go in and write that book, because I really enjoyed it. Thank you for that.
Great. Yeah, thanks.
And another thing that I'd like to go into is AI, because you've been talking a lot about artificial intelligence and its implications on mankind on your socials for the last several weeks. And I'd like to take some time today and do kind of a deep dive on that. But before we do any of that, Pastor Chris, you are a blue collar, nose to the grindstone pastor in Battleground, Washington, right, sir?
Yep. Yeah. Pastor church here, and great folks and all kinds of exciting stuff's happening.
Awesome. And how long have you been doing that?
Well, I've been here for about 3 years. Before that, I was in New England for about 30 plus.
Oh, wow. Okay. Okay. What prompted your move to the West Coast?
They asked me to come.
It's very similar to how we invited you to the Tactics conference last year. I was like, hey, you want to come? And you said, sure.
Yeah, pretty much the way it was. It was actually right after COVID, the lockdowns began, and you know everybody's sort of wondering what's going on. And I had my last church already made plans to transition out of that. My role as senior pastor there and become pastor emeritus and just travel and speak a lot. And I had a whole year's worth of speaking engagements lined up. And when COVID hit, it all shut down. I'm like, okay, what do I do now? And then about a month in, or month, maybe a month and a half in, I got a note on LinkedIn, of all things, from one of our elders here asking me to come out and just preach for him one Sunday. And so one thing led to another, and now I'm here.
Hey, that's awesome. Well, one of the things that I appreciate about you is I can follow you on the socials and I can see what you're up to. You have your hands in lots of different things at the same time. So you do... You do property investment, and it looks like you do a lot of that work yourself, huh?
Well, I have in the past, less so now since I'm here on the West Coast and can only do things when I'm back there. But I like it, and I work on stuff here too. We bought a house, and I'm kind of working on a slow renovation process. So, you know, I've done some things here too.
And you're also, I see you doing illustrations for projects, and you're doing a lot of writing. What's kind of your philosophy behind having different things cooking at the same time?
Inability to focus, maybe. there are a lot of things I like to do, so it's not as though this is some kind of well-developed philosophy or anything. It's just I do have things that I like to do, and I think they relate to each other. So. You know, I was just at New St. Andrews College lecturing in their MFA program here last week, and I got to read, you know, a piece I had written for Touchstone Magazine about H.P. Lovecraft and C.S. Lewis, and then I read them a couple of short stories I've written and give them a little sample of the kind of thing I do with my writing and, you know, give them an opportunity to ask me questions about it. So I write stories, I illustrate, I work on property, I enjoy writing books that I hope can help people. You know, those are the things I'm into.
Yeah. So what would you say, if I was to ask you, you know, what does the typical day in Chris Wiley's life look like? You know, how do you structure your days when you have so many different things going at once?
Well, I think about that a lot. I guess I work in more or less 3 to 4 hour segments. And I developed my approach years ago, but I had it confirmed for me recently. There's a marvelous book entitled Daily Rituals And it's basically a series of vignettes concerning creatives in the past. People, everybody from Charles Darwin to Flannery O'Connor, just like a two pages, like just treatment, where it just says this is what their day looked like. And I discovered that the vast majority of highly productive creatives actually only did their creative work in about a 4-hour slot in the day. So and many of them would do it in the morning before they did other things. So they might get up at say 5 and work till 8. And then go and live a life that looked like just about anybody else's. And so that's my philosophy. And the mornings are for that, for creative work. And when I'm in writing mode, I'm pretty faithful when it comes to that. You know, my problem is I have too many writing projects.
I gotcha. What are you working on right now? Am I allowed to ask? Is there an NDA involved?
Yeah. Well, I'm working on this book on totalitarianism, and that's how I got into the AI stuff, because I do think that that's the thing we need to be worried about. It's already being used against Christians in different parts of the world. AI is one of the things that the Chinese government is using to track people and, you know, their whole social credit score system and basically cancel Christians or punish them for their faith. So the thing with that is, you know, that's the kind of the thing. I've always been concerned about the thumb screws that could be used on me to compel me to do things or to compromise my convictions. And really all my writing on households was inspired by that originally. And so this is just kind of like taking it, you know, into another area, which is the tech stuff. And so I'm doing a lot of work researching that, you know, the stuff that's happening and where it's trending. But so I'm writing a book on that. I've got a couple of other books on the back burner. One is the second book of my young adult series. I'm working on a children's picture book on and off. I've been asked to write a book on risk, and I just can't seem to get to it. So there are all these things that are, and then the church is growing, so you know I've got stuff, and then I travel and speak a lot, so there's just all this stuff going on. I need to get a handle on it.
You're a busy guy, man. Busy guy in high demand. Well, I appreciate you making the trip to Louisiana. When you did, we'll have to have you back down sometime in the future. So don't get too tight of a handle on it. Not yet.
Well, I enjoyed my time with you folks a lot. I like Southern Louisiana. It's a pretty cool place.
Yeah, man. Great culture, great people. We it's very unique. New France, some people call it. Except, you know, not the bad way.
No, I get it, you know, and I like kind of the culture and the food and all that kind of stuff. I think America is just a marvelous place. It's like 50 countries wrapped up in one. And I'm not talking about just the state borders. I mean, there's just all these different things going on, you know, in different places that make America a lot of fun.
That's awesome. Well, that's so you alluded a little bit to your book on totalitarianism, involving you deep diving into AI and understanding more about that. And that's quite a broad spectrum to go from the master Tom Bombadil all the way across into the totalitarian regime and the enforcement of AI on it. So I think, to borrow an illustration from your Tom Bombadil book, I think we see Tom and Saruman depicted, you know, we see the one who goes with the flow of nature and culture and society, and the one who takes it apart to see how it works. I think we're seeing that illustration play out neatly in the day that we live today. So let's dive into the AI stuff. You said that you see Christians being threatened by AI. Could you talk about that a little bit more? Like, is it just the social credit score system, or are you talking about other pieces as well?
Well, I think it's broader. So I did a lecture. I'm the visiting lecturer at New St. Andrews this year, and so my first talk is available through New St. Andrews. I think it's probably on YouTube. But the title of the book, the working title of the book, is St. Anthony and Your Best Life Now, which is kind of tongue-in-cheek because St. Anthony was a desert father who just, you know, fasted all the time in the middle of the wilderness.
Got it.
But I'm using him as a kind of foil to think through ways that we can resist some things that are in the works and growing more, inevitable by the day. So, and there are all kinds of ways that this is can, you know, it occurs. So like when you think about artificial intelligence, most people are familiar with narrow artificial intelligence as it's presented to them in large language models like ChatGPT, you know, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's clever, mm-hmm. You know, it can help you do your homework and maybe can do your homework for you, you know, those kinds of things.
Right.
And really, right now in the world of higher education, it's a significant problem because, mm-hmm. There are, you know, basically plagiarism is like all that English professors are wrapped up at detecting now. It's trying to determine whether or not Johnny or Susie actually wrote that paper, if it was ChatGPT. But anyway, so it's a big problem. But this is just, I liken it to the radium toy phase of, nuclear power. Like in the early 50s, okay. You could actually buy, like an educational toy that actually had radium in it. In other words, literally stuff that can make you really sick.
Oh, okay.
They would play with these toys and their hair would fall out and stuff.
Seriously?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. But at the same time, people just didn't, radio, some nuclear energy is cool. You know, what are all the things we can do? Let's create a toy for kids to play with. And that's like ChatGPT right now. It's sort of like this clever little thing, and it's doing some damage, but it's just kind of a very mild kind of precursor to what's on the way. So you have narrow language, sort of narrow AI, which is tasks specific, but we're seeing progress toward what's known as AGI, which is artificial general intelligence, which is the stuff of science fiction. I mean, that's the stuff that you see presented to you in, the Terminator movies or the, Matrix stuff, which is, mm-hmm. now here's the thing. People get wrapped up in the question of consciousness. It doesn't need to be conscious. That's the thing. Right now it passes okay. the Turing test is, something that was developed by an early, theorist in this area, Turing. I think it's Alan Turing, if I remember correctly. But he said, if you can't tell whether or not you're talking to a human being or to, artificial intelligence, you're there. And that's what's, what we have right now. So people don't know. And that's all you need. And then there are people who say, well, it can't be creative. Well, I'm afraid it is. We actually have demonstrations of its creativity, its agency, its independence. You see, this is the thing that everybody's freaking out about. And it's the high-level people who are freaking out, people like Jeffrey Hinton, who won it, who is actually one of the godfathers of AI and quit Google because he just couldn't reconcile himself to being involved with it because he was the guy behind the Google AI initiative. So he's left. Okay. So he's now trying to warn everybody, and no one takes him seriously except the people who actually study this stuff. So there's a lot of people living in denial, a lot of people who are involved in high tech who think that they're informed and they're not, and they're not actually reading the things that I think they should be reading, or people that, and it's not hard to find this stuff. It's all over the place. But people just can't reconcile themselves to kind of where things are and where they're headed. Let me give an example. So AI, as it exists now, can track your phone, can listen on your phone with conversations. It can access your smart television at home. So, and listen in on you, then actually watch you. You ever notice that these high tech guys have tape over the cameras on their laptops all the time?
I have noticed this. Yes.
Yeah, and there's a reason for that because they know what's going on. They know what can happen, what can be done. So, just walking down the street, facial recognition technology, or just you see all these cameras on the corners and stuff like that. It can recognize you and track you now. So, and that's what's happening in China, and I'm also told in Iran. There was actually a recent convention on religious freedom in Berlin, Germany, in which they were going into just how Christians are being tracked and persecuted in different parts of the world with AI, as it exists now.
As it exists right now. So this is not, this is not, you know, some future potential danger. Right. You're saying this is going on today. It's happening right now.
Right. It's happening right now. And it's, and AI is, it's at a place where the kind of the, it's improving faster than even the experts expected it would.
When you say it's improving, do you mean it's being developed or it is developing itself?
It's both. Because with neural networks, you actually have a learning system, so AI learns. So there is, again, this idea that it's all just kind of like old-fashioned programming. No, the whole approach is to create a system that can learn. So you just, you know, you set the parameters. Yes, you can set the parameters, and then it just goes. And it can teach itself stuff. And then, you know, this is one of the things that these guys are discovering is that they'll establish some parameters. They'll come back in 2 hours, and it'll have taught it. It will have taught itself stuff that people just can't believe it's already mastered.
Yeah. So this is. So I'm a pastor, and I also own a marketing agency. And one of the things that is happening right now in the marketing world. So there's search engine optimization. It's being replaced with answer engine optimization. In other words, it's being replaced with a mechanism that people are trying to build into their sites and into their digital platforms to where the AI can find it easier, because that's becoming the new Google. In fact, there's a lot of Gen Z, which is the 12-year-olds, I think, to the 27-year-olds right now, Gen Z folks who say, hey, we don't even use Google. We just right. type it into ChatGPT. That's our new search engine.
Yeah, that's right. And everybody knows where this is heading, you know. And, you know, the transhumanist feature is something else that's worth considering, because essentially, you know, people like Yuval Noah Harari, who's a pretty significant author that many people in our circles don't even seem to be aware of. You know, you go on. You look
at
his
book. I've never heard of his name before. You just said it.
Well, he's one of the key advisors to the World Economic Forum. If you look up his book *Sapiens*, it's got 35,000 ratings on Amazon. You know how many books you need to sell before you get 35,000 ratings on Amazon? Millions.
A lot.
Millions of books. Yeah. So. He's a huge deal, and nobody even knows who he is in our circles. He's a materialist, and basically he is promoting the idea as a strategy for human self-preservation. This is the thing, human self-preservation to merge with AI. So he's not even trying to upgrade humanity for its own sake. He just says if we don't, we're doomed.
Wow.
So this is the kind of stuff, he's not hard to find. I mean, just Google his name, and he's all over the place.
Wow. So this brings to my mind Frank Herbert, Dune.
Sure.
I saw somebody talking about this. It might have been you talking about it, but his world, the novels Dune, were based on, it was almost like a post-AI world where
that's exactly right.
Okay, they had functionally made that type of computer tech illegal in their right. universe because of a catastrophe that happened.
Well, enslavement of the human race was a pretty bad thing. So what happens in the story is that there is a jihad. That's called the Butlerian Jihad. And the Butlerian Jihad has been over for like 1,000 years before the novels begin. So this is the distant future, like 10,000 years from now. But between the Dune stories and us, there is the triumph of AI. And the Butlerian Jihad is a movement, a religious movement, to free humanity from AI, and it's a religious movement.
Yeah, and it's fascinating because the Dune books are so religious. You know, his story arc is and then they're functionally trying to turn humanity into the new computer through like biohacking and breeding people certain ways, and it's this fascinating storyline.
Yeah, basically, they're kind of stuck. So they're in a situation where artificial intelligence helped the human race to extend its reach into the cosmos, but then the war means that we can't use that anymore, but we still have all these sort of practical problems to have to address. Like, we do need computation. We do need, you know, the ability to navigate the stars and these kinds of things without that stuff. So thinking machines and that. So it creates a kind of a set of problems that they solve through genetic, you know, through breeding and through, and they're looking for the a particular kind of person who's able to see all possibilities. Paul Atreides is. Yeah,
that's right. Anyway, that's right.
So, but I think the thing that's most interesting about it is just simply the conviction that Herbert had that the only thing that'd be strong enough to defeat AI is religion.
Yes.
That was his insight.
Yeah. And I believe, you know, if we're talking about AI in the sense of mastery of humanity, why wouldn't a utilitarian be fine with that? Things are going to get better. So what if we lose humanity in order for things to get better? You know, whatever. My life improves, or life improves, so to speak.
Yeah, that there are certain, you know, sort of the AI community and the transhumanist committee have a lot of different sort of subcultures. So they're not all thinking along those lines, but there are some who do. So if you go into that, certain little pockets, it's a very, you know, you think about Christianity and all the varieties, you know, we have. You know, in terms of denomination, the same things with when you get into that world, you discover all these sort of subcultures within it.
Yeah. So you've used the word transhumanists a couple of times. What is a transhumanist?
Basically, the transhumanist movement is a movement to transcend the limitations of our biology, to upgrade humanity. So there are you know, a range of things that are in the works to do that. One of those things is merging with AI, and there would actually be a kind of neural connection, the neocortex being physically linked to artificial intelligence. And people like Ray Kurzweil and Yuval Noah Harari are talking about that stuff. And in fact, Neuralink is kind of an early iteration of an attempt to move in that direction. So if you're familiar with Elon Musk's company Neuralink, that's actually
I have heard of this. Okay.
And they're actually they're working with paraplegics right now, and that's I think one application of the technology that I can support. I mean, I like, for example, there was a little boy that was been born into my church, was born without limbs. If we could develop prosthetics that could be controlled by his brain, that would enable him to walk and have arms and hands and stuff, I'd be completely supportive, you know. But think about what people might want to do with that. Let's say those arms and legs perform better. You know, just think about the $6 million man or something like that, you know, cyborg.
Mm-hmm. RoboCop.
Yeah. There would be people. There are people today who would cut off their arms and legs to get those.
In one sense, we're talking about moving more towards humanity. In the other sense, we're talking about moving farther from it, right?
Yeah, and so transcending.
The central idea is, hey, God made humans to be human, right? And so that's, I think, goes back to what Freak Herbert was talking about, the idea of it requiring religion in order to rebel against the automatons. This is a fascinating conversation, man.
Well, yeah, and I think his basic insight is that only religion can elicit the kind of dedication and sacrifice that would be necessary to fight that kind of war.
I see.
So it's an existential meaning driven war. And the transhumanists, they are already, if you read Ray Kurzweil, he wrote a book entitled The Singularity is Near. He's got a new book out that I've reviewed for World Magazine called The Singularity is Nearer When We Merge with AI. Ray Kurzweil was a disciple of Marvin Minsky at MIT, who was the guy that helped to develop the Artificial Intelligence Laboratory at MIT, where a lot of this stuff is coming from. And he has identified opposition to transhumanism as the fundamentalist humanist movement. So if we resist, we're fundamentalist in an odd way. We're humanist fundamentalists. He's completely serious. There are people who have, a very strong interest in making certain that people like you and me can't get in the way.
This is interesting. So in the 90s, early 2000s, there was a video game released, and it was called Sid Meier's Alpha Centauri. I don't know if you've ever heard of this before. The whole premise of the video game was we are in the future now, and we are colonizing other planets, but the colonies aren't based off of nationality. They're based off of their traditions. So you have the people who gather together because they're Christian, and the people who gather together because they're technologists and the military faction. And so it's more of their like human tradition than it is their national origin, so to speak, that galvanizes them together. But in that game, one of the ways you win is what you're describing, the transcendence of humanity by merging into the collective. That's a victory path into this thing. And so I remember when I was younger, I was more of a video game kind of guy at that phase in my life. I remember thinking that was fascinating. What a weird way to end a game. What a weird way for this to be a thing that people would want to win. And what we're describing right now is people who functionally believe this. They're saying this is the way to win. This is the way to move humanity forward.
Yeah, I think that the idea that technology would only sort of be applied to the physical world outside of ourselves is kind of a naive belief. I think that's the operative belief most of us have. But, people for time out of mind, have envisioned, operating on ourselves. When you think about that hideous strength, that's one of the things that Lewis is exploring. And when you get into the abolition of man, he anticipated all of this. He's obviously very, very informed critic of what was coming. But I think the thing that's so remarkable about Lewis is just how prescient he was. He was so on the money with a lot of this stuff. Yeah. But when it comes to what I'm up to, I'm of the conviction that AI is a tsunami. It's going to be here. We're all going to have to use it just to make a living. And that being the case, we need to develop a kind of sophisticated way of using it that prevents us from being assimilated and co-opted.
So let's think about that for just a moment. What are some ways to think about AI Christianly, in your opinion? I'm sure that you've done some thinking about this already. What do you think? What do you think going in?
Well, I think there's a tremendous upside to AI, particularly on the hard sciences and the biological sciences side of things. So I think it's a marvelous invention. It will help us to create boutique antibiotics, for example. An antibiotic that's designed just for Stuart Amidon. that kind of thing.
One special antibiotic right there.
Well, and because of what AI is capable of, see, the thing that is challenging when you get to molecular level when you're dealing with the sciences is that the possibilities are almost infinite in terms of the various combinations of things that right now we make almost blind guesses. Let's try this. Let's try that. Mm-hmm. What AI can do is say, okay, here are the 5 billion combinations that we could explore. These 5 look promising. And then we can take those and actually do those and see how they turn out. Yeah. So that's what we have with like material science, new alloys, new materials, those kinds of things. I think that so when we think about AI in the best way, I think it's a huge leap forward for us in being able to do some things that are going to be really helpful, particularly to people who are, suffering with diseases and stuff like that, because we'll be able to explore cures and approaches that we've never been able to sort of even conceive of before. Where I think we're in trouble is when it comes to totalitarian regimes and it comes to social unrest. So, you know, we're on the cusp of an election that everybody's got, you know, feeling dread about, not because they're only afraid the other party that they don't support is going to win, but what will the other party that loses do when they get the news that they've lost, and you know, what kind of social unrest can, well, those are the conditions where people will be able to justify employing AI in terms of social control. So there are all sorts of ways. And then there's kind of the atrophying of our own sort of abilities to do things. And this is something that goes way back in the history of philosophy. So this is something that sometimes people don't have an appreciation for. But the ancients, I mean, people like Plato and Aristotle, they anticipated all kinds of things. So in the Phaedrus, Plato, you know, through Socrates, actually is calling into question the wisdom of writing. He says, you know, the problem with writing, well, he actually lists a number of things. But basically the idea is that there are always trade-offs in when it comes to technological innovation. And we as people just only seem to, because we're kind of caught up in the myth of progress, think that there is no such thing as a net gain. It's only a pure gain. An example of a net gain would be, you know, there are certain things we lose, but the things that we gain are more valuable than the things that we lost. And so we live with the fact that we've lost some things, because the things that we now have justify that loss.
Sure.
Let me give you an example.
People don't make their own candles anymore.
You know? Well, there's that. So we lose the ability to, you know, to do that kind of craft unless you're into the hobby. But let's just think about something as sort of ubiquitous in America as air conditioning. I love air conditioning. There are days when I say, thank God for air conditioning. Who invented this stuff?
That kind of stuff. Right, right.
But here's a weird way to think about it. Porches in the South. That was where you went to cool off at the end of the day, right? Your house is just baking, you know. You're in Louisiana, you know what it's like.
Exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, that's right. When we have hurricanes and the power goes off, you got a whole new approach on that house.
yeah. And it was, you know, so the front porch is kind of a Southern invention. And it was something that you see in other parts of the country, but it's not part of the vernacular of those areas. So like, for example, in New England, porches didn't get put on houses for like the first couple hundred years because there was just no need for them. There's no felt need. But there are certain kind of ancillary benefits to the porch. Well, there's a kind of, well, we're all sitting out in the porch. We're playing music. We're talking. There are neighborhoods in the city where every house has a porch and everybody's sitting out and people are like waving at each other and walking down the street. Mm-hmm. And the reason they're all outside is not... Yeah. Yeah, the reason they're outside is not because they're like super friendly. It's because it's so stinking hot inside.
right.
Now, you don't want to come out.
Right.
You're inside. Yeah. That's where you want to stay. So now, does that mean air conditioning is evil? Of course not. It just means that we think that being cool is really great.
Right. We don't like heat stroke.
Yeah, that's right. So there's a trade-off. We don't think in those terms anymore. So to have AI do all of my thinking for me, you know, to tell me this or tell me that, to follow them, like just think about Google Maps. It used to be I would memorize names of streets. I would memorize how to get from place to place. I didn't need extra help. But now because I've got my stupid, you know, GPS, you know, I don't even pay attention anymore. I just turn. Yeah, I'm just So, but this, and again, I'm happy for my GPS helps me get all sorts of places. But
to
at the same
get to
time,
Louisiana, you know, we'll take that.
But at the same time, I lose something. You know, there's something that's lost in the process. And when do you say the price is too high? Yeah, there are some things we'd be able to do if we went there, but it would cost us too much.
I think the thing that we seem to be returning to again and again is the idea of moving more towards humanity and not away from it, right? And so for Christians, we have what the Bible has told us being human is, you know, what the mission of humanity is, what our purpose is. And so we can move further towards that using technology, like you were talking about healing, being able to provide someone limbs again, you know, and then the idea of moving away from it. Well, that arm's better. I'm going to chop mine off so I can get the robo arm instead. You know, there's a moving away from it that occurs that we want to avoid. And I think, you know, to tie all this back to one of the things that I really wanted to talk about, which is your Bombadil book, I think you hit it on the head, man, when you're talking about the master of Tom Bombadil mastering in the right way as opposed to Saruman, which I think we're seeing today.
Oh yeah, Saruman and Sauron are both magicians in kind of the sense that C.S. Lewis was talking about when he talked about materialist magician in the Screwtape Letters. And Sauron, you know, for example, you know, the Eye of Sauron. So we have this, you know, it's presented to us in, you know, the films as this big cat eye on the top of a tower, right?
Right. Yeah.
That actually, I suspect that was inspired by, and I can't prove it, but I just suspect it's the case. It was inspired by the Panopticon, which was an idea that Jeremy Bentham, the father of utilitarianism, dreamed up for a prison. So in the Panopticon, you've got a central tower with an all-seeing eye, and then prisoners who have no privacy, who are just under the purview of the eye that cannot be hidden from all the time. And we are growing, we're developing a kind of panoptic, a panopticon. It's called AI.
And it can track you, develop an algorithm about you, predict your habits, monitor all of those things.
Yeah, it basically, so for example, if you become an object of interest, it would be able to just sort of keep up with you. So this is already the case. So for example, right now in Utah, I learned this through some people at NSA, not New Saint George's College, but the National Security Administration. So I was at an event, this is a few years back, and we had some retired NSA guys. This was for the Academy of Philosophy and Letters, and we were in Washington, D.C., and we had these guys come in to talk to us about what was going on with surveillance. And they said, right now, every text, this is like maybe 8-9 years ago, every text, every phone call is recorded right now. So they have it. They have this conversation we're engaged in right now. It's being recorded. So
these are NSA guys. This is security admin guys. This is not somebody with a tinfoil hat on. They retired and they're talking about what they did years ago.
Yeah, yeah. And it was fun because one of them had actually been, you know, actually listened in on Jane Fonda's phone calls. Yeah, I don't know if you remember that when she was an object of interest for the Nixon administration and her phones were tapped. And he was telling us, yeah, I listen to her all the time. But anyway, right now, so big data, there's a huge recording database in Utah that just uses an incredible amount of water, because to keep this equipment cool and functioning, it just requires a lot of water. And we're seeing more of that kind of stuff. So right now, Microsoft has secured and made arrangements to reactivate the Three Mile Island nuclear reactor to just power its AI alone, which would be enough power to light New York City.
Holy smokes.
It's easy to find. Just Google Microsoft Three Mile Island and you'll see it.
When did this happen?
A couple weeks ago.
Wow. So this is a big deal. It's happening right now. Yeah.
It's happening right now. Yeah. And everything. So I have a guy I know who was at the January 6th protests in Washington, who is going off to spend 4 months in federal prison. They gave him a plea deal. And the reason they got him is his phone turned him in. They had all of the signatures for all the phones that were being carried by all of the protesters. And they, in this particular area, they trapped them and they did a screening and boom. And they essentially told them, you can either, you know, take this plea deal and get 4 months, or if you fight it, you'll get 4 years. That's happening right now. I know this guy. He's a nice guy, good guy, believer, didn't do anything wrong. Just happened to be at, you know, at in that location when they did this, when they did the read.
So what are they? What are his charges? Being present,
being part of a protest that was, you know, it was disruptive. I don't know the charges. I know I can't tell you what, you know, they how they're put, but yeah. That I know he is because I. I'm involved with trying to take care of his family now that he's heading off to California to prison.
Holy smokes. This is the kind of stuff that makes me want to buy a Faraday bag for my phone. Like, you know, this is some real life stuff here. So what, so how do we live right now? How then shall we live, Pastor Chris? So in the day where we are monitored and pursued, how do we live like Tom's? What do we do?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, when we think about the two approaches, you know, dominion and domination, with Tom, we have dominion. With Saran, we have domination. Mm-hmm. With Tom, we have life flourishing and joy and delight in the good things that we enjoy as creatures. And in, you know, the case of Saran and Saruman, you've got, you know, just blight and decay and death everywhere. My convictions, and I'm still thinking through a lot of this, but this is why I turned to Anthony, because I thought, well, here's a guy that maybe has some things that he is known for that could be sort of reinterpreted and applied to the modern world. So three things that he's known for are, you know, obviously he went into the desert. Then he's known for the ability to discern the spirits. So I think discernment. And then the third thing is mastery of his body. He was very committed to mastering his body. And I think that the danger that we are presented with, so there's always two-way traffic with tech. We think it just kind of like it amplifies our influence, but we don't see that subtly there's influences being exercised by other people on us. Mm-hmm. It's like when you think about the Roman Empire, all roads lead to Rome. They think that, okay, that means that the Roman legions can kind of get wherever they need to go, but it also means that the barbarians can come back on those same roads. And that's what we're discovering, you know, in the United States. Everybody wants to be here because we're the new empire. We're the center of the world. Everybody wants to be where the action is. That's why we have, you know, a porous border. Everybody's trying to get in.
Right.
So it makes perfect sense because this really is where the action is. But we need to become much more cagey and sophisticated in how we use tech and how we think about it. I think that when it comes to the digitization of things, and this is one of the things that a lot of these AI guys talk about. They talk about more or less the colonization of the physical world by the digital world. So more and more the physical world becomes subject to the control of the digital world. So, you know, an obvious example would be something like a Tesla car, you know, something you can shut off at a distance, right? So like if you're in a high-speed chase and trying to get away from the cops, and the cops say, you know, turn off the car, they can do that remotely. Your car just doesn't run anymore. But that's something that can happen in lots of ways and lots of things. So if you're physically connected to AI in some way, you know, it doesn't even have to be a Neuralink thing, but just your smartwatch or your phone or whatever, they can mess with your life in a big way.
So figuring out ways to limit that would probably be a smart play.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's kind of what I'm thinking about. So, like, when we think about going into the desert, there really is no desert to retreat to anymore except the physical world. Mm-hmm. So the desert of the analog is what I call it, retreating to the analog.
Vinyls.
I don't think we'll be able to do that totally. I think that might even be a bad idea. I think that we need to to still have a presence in the digital world, but we need to be able to strategically retreat to the analog world, almost like Christians in the catacombs.
Yeah, and I'm noticing another recurring theme, kind of as we're talking, an idea of self-mastery rather than letting something else master you. You know, so the Bible calls that self-control. And we have that by the gift of the Holy Spirit, but it's still our responsibility. The scripture tells us to fan the flame, fan the gifts into flame, you know, so practice it, be diligent with it. Don't just coast with where the algorithm wants to send you, because that's a thing, you know, you can be led in a particular direction digitally pretty easily. I first got back on Twitter after Elon bought it, there was a certain type of person that was in my feed predominantly. And now in my feed, it's all the new, what the world would call far right, alt-right guys. I've been pointed a particular way over time. It's fascinating to see that. But yeah. I think that you're right. We need to be aware and limiting those things insofar as we can. In a world that's telling us to create more content for the internet, it's almost like we should be considerably self-controlled about how we do so.
Well, and this is something that Harari talks about. He says, you know, we are now hackable animals. Basically, AI goes to school on you and can make a boutique sort of take a boutique approach, knowing your likes, your tastes, your fears, all these kinds of things, to sort of hack you. And so that this is what we're up against. Now, getting back to my books on the household, so I mentioned early that my interest in the household in part had to do with sort of escaping the thumb screws. So in the 1990s, when I lived in Cambridge, I lived right between Harvard and MIT, and I was at Harvard Divinity School, and I met a lot of people who would today we'd call woke, and I knew that what they were up to was going to be sort of the next sort of big thing in Western culture, and I would tell people, you know, you need to be concerned about the X, Y, and Z, you know, basically, you know, things related to sexuality or economics or race and stuff like that. And everybody thought I was nuts. Everybody just wrote me off. Yeah. I'm getting the same treatment now by people with regard to this whole AI thing. It doesn't bother me because I was right last time. it's a sad story because I predicted that the denomination that I was in would go woke, the college that I taught at would go woke, and the college that I taught at would close, and all those things happened. So, but what I realized is that the way the left exercises social influence through institutions is very sophisticated, and they're very good at it. They know how to leverage. They know they're never going to be the majority. That's not their tack. And the problem with conservative sort of salt of the earth, you know, just, you know, working class regular folks, is they think that because of the majority they're going to win. That's not the way you need to think. I mean, you need to understand how these things kind of work themselves out. And so the left knew that if they could get a foothold in Wall Street, get a foothold in the military, get basically take over human resources when it comes to large corporations everywhere, that they would be impossible to stop. And that's what they did. And so the whole woke phenomenon. Now, I think we're turning a corner on it, but it's a lot of it has to do with actually the stuff that AI kind of represents, which is the need for competence and skill. So I think one of the things that turned, say, Elon Musk against the woke agenda is that he realized that his own agenda was compromised because of the lowering of standards when it came to, say, the STEM you know, fields. And the woke, you know, that was the, you know, they had all kinds of goofy stuff, you know, you know, sort of like, you know, math is racist and stuff like that. You know, they right. you know, I don't know if you remember that, right. but they were saying that kind of stuff. So like, right. you know, yeah. getting your math, yeah. doing your math homework and getting the answers right, it was racist or something like that. And, and it was at that point that I think a lot of the people in Silicon Valley said, this has gone far enough. So I don't,
yeah.
So I think what we see woke stuff.
Yeah.
I think the woke stuff is in retreat everywhere, but I think the thing that's kind of coming on the scene is transhumanism and AI.
So that's the new wokeness. It's the new thing to watch out for.
Yeah, yeah. It's got a different. So here's another way to think about it. If you think about utopianism or utopian movements, you know, like Marxism. Mm. Essentially, mm-hmm. you have what Eric Voglin, who I think taught at Louisiana State, if I remember right, he said, don't immanentize the eschaton. I don't know if you've ever heard that phrase. Mm-hmm. Basically, the idea mm-hmm. is don't try to like bring into the real world an ideal of the end of the world, right? So like the kingdom of God. So you could say that Marxism is a kind of secularized Christian kingdom of God. The idea of equality, everybody's treated, you know, justly, and everything's kind of leveled out, and mm-hmm. you know, this kind of stuff. And the problem with that, of course, is it ends up impoverishing everybody and making everybody miserable and making us subject to a you know, kind
small
of
small problems, just little yeah. problems.
So what the left traditionally has done has tried to immanentize the eschaton on the social dimension of things in that area. But I think transhumanism is seeking to immanentize the eschaton with the glorification of the body. It actually mm-hmm. has death in its sights. It believes that death is an engineering problem. I'm not making this up. And that we're going to be able to beat death and upload our consciousness onto another substratum, another platform, silicon, and be essentially infinitely upgradable.
Wow. And so that's the hive mind consciousness thing, the transhumanism
yeah,
culmination,
they don't,
you would say.
Well, they don't call it hive mind. So this is another thing, you know, so I think that the libertarian vision is much more sort of ideologically compatible with transhumanism. It's not Marxist. Transhumanism is not Marxist. It's not collectivist in the sense that, say, Marxism is.
Okay. Okay. It's still an individualistic type of
yeah. It's life. it's much more Nietzsche's vision. You know, with okay. the Übermensch. So, like if you read Nietzsche, you're introduced to something he calls the Übermensch, which is the overcoming man, which is the self-improving man. And then you have the people who he leaves behind, which are referred to as the last men, who are basically, they have no motivation, they're just basically drugged and sedated and fed.
Man, Pastor Chris, so, this is...
When you get into the transhumanist stuff, you'll actually have people like Harari say that most people will be useless, and I don't know if you've heard the term universal basic income (UBI),
yeah.
which is basically what they think will be necessary. They don't necessarily think it's a good thing, but they say it'll be necessary because essentially most people will be useless.
Wow. Man, so it's moving away from humanity, like we were talking about before. It's not moving towards humanity.
Now, whether or not this is feasible, whether they'll be able to pull it off or anything like that, it's all up in the air, and I'm not betting on anything. But I do think the thing to be concerned about is sort of the myth, sort of the eschatological vision and the appeal of it to people. And so, like, you know, Marxism never worked. That didn't mean it didn't take over and ruin a lot of people's lives. It sure. did. So just right. because this is unworkable doesn't mean it won't take over and ruin a lot of lives.
Right, right. Absolutely. Yeah, no, I see exactly what you're talking about. Man, Pastor Chris, I wish we could go a lot longer, but we're running out of time. Real quick, before we sign off, where would you send people to learn more about this? Do you have any resources of your own or any place else that you would send folks to talk about AI and the things that are coming as a result of it?
Well, I just started reading a book by a guy named Joe Allen, and I'm only about maybe two chapters into it. It's called Dark Aeon,
Okay.
Transhumanism and the War Against Humanity.
Okay.
So Steve Bannon wrote the intro. So you got some pretty significant people who have endorsed it, people like Naomi Wolf. So it's so this is a guy who did a lot of work on tech in the Boston area, and he's got people he's connected to in the world of high tech and the transhumanist movement, and he's giving us and he's not writing necessarily as a Christian. He's just kind of going over what's going on with the whole movement.
I got you. I understand. Okay, great. Well, thank you so much. Man, Pastor Chris, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate you. Thank you for hanging out. I know you're a busy guy. It really, really means a lot.
Well,
Means a lot.
glad to do it. Thanks a lot for having me.
Yeah, man. All right, guys. Thank you guys so much for watching another episode of the Tactics Con podcast. For more information on the conference, you can go to tacticscon.com. Thank you again so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.